Digital 410 Productions proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts Don Abernathy and Jeff Copsetta.
Eugene Slade came whenever we came back off of New Britain to Pavuvu. Sledge was there for, come in as a replacement, and he was assigned to my squad, and I knew that he'd had a little bit of college, and but he was just a green kid like I was whenever I first got there, and I never thought too much about him one way or the other as far as him, where he was a good Marine or where he wasn't a good Marine. He went through all the training and everything that we went through, and then we went on into Peleliu, and whenever we hit Peleliu, well, Sledge always did what I told him to do or asked him to do and never hesitated. And you can't ask much more than that of a Marine, of a guy, your buddy. And I always admired Sledge for the simple reason that the way I understood it, his dad was a medical doctor, and they were pretty well off, I think, and so they had a yard boy, and they had a nanny, and a cook, and everything like that. And Sledge, his only responsibility was to feed his dog. And I thought the kid come out of an environment like that and come into the Marine Corps, as strict as they are and as much physical training as you get and mental training, I thought he did real well. And I always admired him for that, sticking in.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II-based podcast, and we are back again. We're excited to have, once again, Henry Sledge. But first and foremost, Jeff, how are you, friend? How's everything in Texas?
Couldn't be better.
Shout out, just a quick heads up, and here's the hope, and everybody in Louisiana is all right from the hurricane tonight. Being down here in Florida and someone who's lived through six hurricanes myself, I know even on a good hurricane, quote unquote, if there is one, long consecutive days and weeks in the hot summer without power and water, even if you don't have any property damage, still sucks and can take a toll on the family, not only financially, but it's just rough. So for all the people who were just going through that hurricane today, you know, our thoughts are with you guys. And going without being said, our thoughts are with the family members of the 13 Marines who and the corpsmen who lost their lives in service last Sunday. But on those notes, how are you guys doing, Henry? How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. I'm happy to be here again.
Jeff, I just thought we'd pick up kind of where we left off on last week's episode. First and foremost, we'd like to talk about the fancy things behind you, that mortar, though, huh? And that's very theme appropriate for this episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so.
Nice piece. So last week you're telling Henry that you would like to take the opportunity to just explain a little bit about your experiences with the HBS Pacific and all things EB Sledge and the PTO and its affected on what you've gone through.
Yeah, so I guess first to tell that story, I kind of want to talk a little bit about the first time I saw a Band of Brothers. And it was kind of a funny thing looking back. I had one of my squad leaders. We were overseas, and one of my squad leaders was real proud that his wife had bought him the Band of Brothers box set. Now this would have been for Christmas of 2004. I'm pretty sure that's the year it came out. I mean, I don't remember hearing Band of Brothers a miniseries before we left. So I'm pretty sure that's about the time it came out. It was pretty new.
I just found out, not to interrupt you, but I just found out from reading this book we'll get into later, it actually premiered 2 days before 9/11.
Yes. Yep.
Really?
Yes. It premiered 2 days before 9/11. And in this book, they make a reference to how the impact of what the men were going through, how it was kind of obviously not intended during production, but how that spoke to what we were going through and, you know, as a country and and the blow that we just went undertook. But that's actually brought up in this book. Yeah, 2 days prior to 9/11, it premiered on HBO.
Well, I was only 3 years off there.
Well, I mean, not everybody had HBO. I mean, let's be honest. So,
well, I was in basic training. I was up at Fort Knox when September 11th happened. So maybe I was just kind of a little bit busy from then until March of 04 when we went across the berm to Iraq over there. But anyway, either way, we didn't have much time for movies. And so it was pretty fresh for a lot of us. And so my squad leader got this beautiful package in the mail. You know, she spent whatever it was like $80 at the PX or whatever, you know, and she bought it for him, mailed it over, and nobody could borrow it. And if, you know, he had to be there, he had to be the one to put the disc in. Nobody touched it. I mean, he was real proud of it. And I think we watched it over the course of about a week, you know, or maybe longer, because, you know, we had stuff to do. But there was a handful of us that tried to kind of tune into it, you know, in the evening when we got done with our missions or whatever, or whenever we had downtime. And I'd never been so moved. And maybe it was the environment I watched it in. And but I definitely remember the end where, you know, I mean, I probably watched it 100 times. And it's hard to not get a little bit emotional when Major Winters talks about, you know, that very last scene where he's kind of signing off with the conversation with his grandson. And I just kind of remember looking around the room with these guys that I saw every day that I couldn't stand being around, kind of thing, but you're fighting next to them. It kind of dawned on me then that maybe one day I'll look back and see these guys that same way. You know, we were 18, 19, 20 years old, or I'd turned 21 over there, but, you know, it kind of made me see everything a little bit different. And so that was kind of my introduction with that miniseries. So naturally, and of course, you know, growing up, yeah, you know, I was a huge fan of the Mighty Eighth, you know, reading about it, you know, B-17s, that was my thing, Memphis Belle. But there was always kind of a soft spot. There was kind of this weird enigma about the Pacific that as a boy, it was just so hard to grasp the tiny little specks that were the islands that we invaded and the vastness of, you know, what these fleet carriers were responsible for with Dauntlesses and Hellcats. And it was overwhelming to me as a kid. And you know, the you know, model airplanes, for example, you know, finding that right model airplane to build for the Pacific. And I still do. You know, I still do that kind of stuff. But I don't know. There was something about it. There was something different about the environment in the Pacific than there was to me for the boys over in Europe. And I don't know what it is. They're just, I don't know. I can't explain it. It was grittier, maybe. You know, I don't know. I wasn't there. There was just something about it. So when I picked up a book, I'm always reading. Don knows this. Always reading. And I think it was 2012, 2013, somewhere in there. And I'm not exactly sure when the Pacific debuted. I don't know when that debuted. What was that?
2010.
Okay, well, I certainly didn't see it when it was new, because I do remember, I'm pretty sure my daughter was born, and she was born in 11. But anyway, I got a real bad case of pneumonia. I was hospitalized with pneumonia. I was physically picked up out of my bed and taken to the emergency room. And I remember being told in the emergency room, oh, you have some, you know, time to take because you're going to be sick for a while. And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm going down to the coast tomorrow morning. And they're like, yeah, no, you're not. Like, yeah, actually.
Little did you know, and you'll be like Chuckler on Pavuvu.
Yeah, exactly. So the next day, I drove the wife and kids, and we took my mom down to a cabin on Copano Bay down there in Fulton, down, you know, by Port Aransas, and spent the week down there. And I just distinctly remember that trip because I was reading Hugh Ambrose's The Pacific. I was reading that book. And I, you know, I didn't have HBO. I've never had HBO. So maybe that's why the miniseries passed me up. You know, I probably didn't even have a smartphone then. So I probably had no way to see it. But I do remember after reading that book and hearing about it, oh, gosh, if this is anything like Band of Brothers, I can't wait. Finally, this is what I want to see. And we kind of talked about in that last episode, I was really looking forward to the character, the Dauntless pilot in Midway. I've wanted to feel like I'm in a Dauntless and a 70 degree dive, you know, and this cinematic, beautiful masterpiece, and just, you know, and I think the Midway film, you know, recently came pretty close to what I was looking for then. But of course,
yeah,
now
we liked it.
What's that, sir?
I liked the 2019 Midway movie.
But not
to get you off track.
Yeah, I can talk about that one all day. But anyway, so I finally got to see it, and I'll be honest, I didn't like it at first, and I think maybe because I expected more of the Band of Brothers, even though I knew the characters in the book and I knew they weren't in the same unit, but it was really kind of confusing to watch at first. And even my wife was kind of the same way, you know, and you know, we've talked about this in previous episodes where around wintertime, you know, my wife and I, we sit down, we watch Band of Brothers. It happens every year.
Yeah.
That's going to happen.
Cool crisp autumn nights. You got to have Saving Private Ryan and then work into Band of Brothers. And as it gets colder toward Christmas, it's Bastogne.
See, absolutely. I live in Florida. It's hot all the time.
I heard you guys talk about that on an earlier episode, and I'm like, man, these guys are talking my language. I'm the same way. Something about a cool September, October night, I want to be watching Saving Private Ryan. You get on into the colder weather, man, it's time to go to Bastogne.
Real quick, Henry, I tried to get in your camp. I went on 2 days ago, looked for a thin red line, see if I can find it anywhere. I could have got off Amazon for $3.99, but I refused to pay for it. So if there was a free version, I was going to rewatch it and give you a new acquired opinion on the movie, because it's been probably 15 years since I've seen it. If the damn thing would have been free, I just could not bring myself, based on my original opinion, to pay the $3 for it.
I sat down and watched it Friday night, okay, and Jeff's on a channel.
Sure.
And I don't want to get him off, but go ahead, Jeff. I mean, we could go on about that.
Yeah, we could go on. But I'm saying all that for, if there was anybody that's listening or anybody that's watching it right now, if they watch it the first time and they didn't like it for some of those similar reasons, watch it again, because you can't. You just can't go into that miniseries with the same mindset that you do Band of Brothers. It's totally different. And once you understand that, once you kind of mentally prepare for what you're about to witness, and it takes a couple times, there were some character development flaws, I thought, in some of the minor characters. You know, I do remember the first time seeing it. One, I'll give you an example, and I can't think of the guy's name, but it's the guy that Leckie sees in jail on, was it Pavuvu or whatever?
It's interesting.
The guy who shot the dude on Cape Gloucester.
He
choked the guy.
Yeah, he choked the guy. And it's interesting, yes, you said that. I think it's Douglas, something like that.
I remember the character.
I have notes on that. Go ahead, Jeff, because I think I know where you're going, and when Henry and I got to talk, and I went back and rewatched it, and when I first watched the series, I thought that character, and no disregard to the actor, but the way the character was presented, he was such a he was like a nobody until that episode. You're like, who's this guy again? And
right.
It wasn't until like my 17th rewatching last week that I see that
you see him everywhere.
You see, and not only that, but you hear where, like, in post production, they'll put his name in there, almost as if they realized when they got to the end that, oh shit, this guy wasn't around enough that it meant as much as it should have. And I actually had that in my notes for last week, but go ahead, I'll look at his name.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're really getting picky there, but it is fabulous. And, you know, I grew up about an hour from Raritan, New Jersey. You know, the home of John Bassalone. And, you know, I've been to that statue a couple times. He's really something. In fact, the first time I went to Raritan was in October timeframe. And apparently I was there a week, either a week prior or a week after they have John Bassalone Day. And I guess, is it John Cera, the actor?
Yeah.
From the
Seda.
Oh, Seda, yeah. He goes there apparently every year dressed as Bassalone for the parade.
Really?
I news to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole Bassillon family's still there. It's a beautiful little town in Raritan, New Jersey. It's got the Raritan River runs right through it. I mean, you can kind of feel the colonial times around it.
Right.
You know, it's just kind of one of those little nooks of a town that kind of never really grew up. And it's really at an indescript traffic circle kind of thing where the statue is. It's not like it's downtown by, you know, the courthouse or anything. It's just kind of there. But, and there's like it's either a stop sign or traffic light, whatever, but people stop there. And when I was there, everybody that stopped there, they rolled their windows down and it was cold. They rolled their windows down like, that's our boy. That's Johnny. That's our man. You know, that's hometown hero. Great. You know, and I think probably my opinion, the Pacific miniseries may have something to do with that. Yeah, they knew he was there. They saw the statue, but I'm curious. I have a feeling that exposure kind of reopened that stuff, you know, and that's the biggest thing to me with the Pacific. They really, I think they shed a lot of light on the Pacific campaign in general, because let's face it, when you crack open a history book, you know, it's Pearl Harbor, Iwo Jima, Atom Bomb. That's the Pacific.
Pretty much.
In the history books today. Nobody's heard of it.
And we see that when regular non-World War II people find out the D-Day was a generic term used for the beginning of every single operation, not just Normandy, France. People just assume D-Day. And I get it, but to your point, you know, people who don't research it, the Pacific and the Band of Brothers both did a fantastic job on making people who deserve accolades finally get those accolades and knowledge. And the other thing too about the Pacific and John Bazelon stuff, it kind of goes to show you how things have changed substantially. I'm 43. I still feel like a young fella. I know, Jeff, you're in your what, late 30s? Lena was 33 when she became a widow. Never remarried. That's astonishing. She was so young, had so much of her life, and she was just like, that's it. I'm going to be Mrs. Bazelon the rest of my life, and I'm going to mourn him the rest of my life. And to me, that just, in itself, kind of seems a little tragic. But it also says something about love and family, at least in that time. But it's like, damn, she's only 33. Now, when I'm 23, she's old. But now I'm 40, fuck. She was only 33, and that was it for her. And that just seems so tragic.
You know, Jeff, to your point, I mean, again, going back to conversations with Bruce McKenna, okay? You know, Bruce was one of the main creators of Band of Brothers. He was instrumental with the Pacific, as I believe I went into some last week. But he knew how much I loved Band of Brothers. And, you know, he told me, he said, now, Henry, I'm telling you, this thing's going to be different. And to not repeat what I might have said last week, you know, one of the consultants for HBO on the Pacific was Richard Frank, who, you know, Rich Frank is a very well-known PTO historian. He wrote, I think, the definitive book on Guadalcanal.
I've met him several times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rich is a good friend of mine. He was a good friend of my dad's. I got to be really good friends with him during, you know, 2009, 2010, when the Pacific was coming out. And I remember he and I talked on the phone several times, really, but one of our conversations before it premiered, he said, you know, in Band of Brothers, you saw like the scope that they presented of Army operations. You know, you saw majors and colonels and lieutenant colonels and generals. You know, you saw kind of that whole rubric of command structure. And he said the Pacific is underneath the rim of the helmet. It is that individual perspective. And so that's why they explored things like my dad being haunted so much by his experience and Robert Leckie. I mean, you know, he had a harrowing time of it himself. I mean, and the Pacific explored that more than Band of Brothers did. Now, with three separate characters and three separate storylines, you know, I read all the reviews. I read what people were saying because I was primed. I wanted to know what people thought because I wanted so desperately for people to like it. I wanted desperately to like it. But again, even though I had had been coached on what to not compare it to. I still compared it to Band of Brothers. How could you not? And so I'll be honest, and I told you guys this, you know, I watched it when it came out, my wife and I did. And of course I was so close to the story. There were things, you know, like the damn thing with the 45 and all. Well, you know, and there were other things, and I'm just like, why did they do this? Why did they do that? And I was really angry at first. And roll on a number of years to basically, you know, now, and it just, it's fortuitous the way things work out. But I've gotten involved in a couple of projects that have shown me that the Pacific had legs. It has legs. It stands up. I mean, and I think the people who are going to care about this kind of thing and who go back to Band of Brothers, go back to the Pacific, they have an awareness that, okay, these were two completely different projects, okay? The goals of the Pacific were different from Band of Brothers. I was reading some random reviews on the internet, and one guy, just some nameless, faceless person who watched both and was addressing which one was better. And Jeff, he's probably around your age, just guessing from what he said, but he said, I grew up watching Band of Brothers, and then I watched the Pacific, and I went in the military. And I don't know where he served or anything, but he said, I went into the military expecting it to be like Band of Brothers. I came out of it realizing it was more like the Pacific. And that was kind of heavy, because what he was saying was, sure, I mean, there's the camaraderie and all that, but I mean, there's a lot of dark mental stuff that can happen to individuals too. And I, you know, let me just say right off the bat, I was never in the military. Okay. So I can only imagine what people who were and had to be overseas, what they deal with. But certainly growing up, seeing my dad and how he wrestled with the demons that he wrestled with and successfully and conquered them, you know, I saw the iron will and self-discipline that he had to have to not let all that get on top of him. But suffice it to say that, you know, after, you know, here a couple of weeks ago, sitting down and saying, okay, guys, I still had the box set that they gave me out in Hollywood, still wrapped up in plastic. I hadn't even, you know, other than when I watched it on HBO, I hadn't even opened that thing. So I cut the plastic off of it and sat down and said, okay, I'm going to introductions, interview, the whole bit. I'm going to take in the entire experience. And I watched it not once, but twice. And you know, I completely reassessed my opinion of it. Now, you know, look, you can't be as close to that story as I was and not wish they'd done certain things differently. But overall, I just completely reassessed my opinion of it.
And I think the producers of that show, they were kind of in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
Yes.
Because if it would have been like Band of Brothers, then, oh, it's just Band of Brothers light.
Yeah. You
know, and so they were kind of in a position where, you know, one, it's a completely different environment. Once again, for what, you know, not only were they fighting against the Japanese, but they're fighting against the environment. But in the world of Hollywood and production and all that, they were in a sticky situation because I don't know, like I just said, it's if they would have been too much like Band of Brothers, people, that would have been the criticism. And then they made it not like Band of Brothers, and for some people, that was a criticism.
That was a criticism, yep.
Now, I liked it because, as I said last week, I had read your father's book before they even announced the show. And so I went into it just stacked and ready to go because I was probably 8 months off of reading your dad's book. I actually think I read it twice. So I read it once, made the decree they need to make this into a miniseries, and when I found out they did or were working on it, I read it again. And so when his scenes came up, I was like, oh, I knew what was happening. And the scene with the entrenching tool and the Marine is having the nightmares, and you know, I'm sure in real life it was a snafu, but when they had snafu throwing the rock into the skull of the Jap machine gunner and all that, it was like, I was in, more importantly, the scene where your father's on Okinawa and he slides into the foxhole with the dead Marine. People don't realize the importance of that scene if you haven't read the book, because in the book, that Marine's body was a timepiece, a literal timepiece. Your father referred to it. He saw it the day that the Marine died. He saw it 3 days later, and every time he was going back from going out on front lines or doing the duties that he was made to do back to his foxhole, he was using the decomposition of that body as a timeline for how long he had been there, and then to end up sliding down there. And he goes into great detail talking about how the soil and the maggots and all that stuff. Yep. And so that scene itself was kind of like just kind of thrown in there. I wish they would have put a little bit more of the timeline in, but once again, they had to push it down into one episode. Whereas, you know, Peleliu, they did two episodes, but you know, for me, I was just, I enjoyed it because I knew the subject matter was completely different because I was already off the book twice before I even sat down and watched the initial viewing of it. So I greatly appreciate it, but I can understand how, you know, I've had this conversation multiple times with different people, and it is interesting. And I think this is a good challenge for those watching or listening to this podcast who maybe were in both you and Jeff's camp, who, and maybe my camp with a thin red line, I may go back and like it, but give it a second watch, a third watch. I think you'll definitely come around. And,
Agreed.
Speaking of Band of Brothers, we